as soon as you come up with your core character's truth and you know exactly what drives them and you know exactly what you're going to do, you end up, it doesn't exactly write itself, but you find yourself in situations or surprised by situations that you maybe didn't anticipate in the first place. And while you can still reach that wow plot point and you know that you can get there, the journey that they take to get there will be, it will surprise you as a writer, which makes, I mean, for me, keeps me excited, but it also keeps it so true to your characters that your readers will feel like they're following them on an actual journey, rather than just a story that you plotted out. And that, at least on this endeavor, has worked out really well for me.
This is the Crit RPG Podcast, your one-stop shop for everything Lit RPG, Progression Fantasy, and Royal Road.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to the Crit RPG Podcast, the only podcast that accepts bribes. With me today is Meg, or Saving Throw, author of So When Am I a Hero? Brackets, Lit RPG, and Bracket, that you can find on Royal Road, and you check it out. Hi, Meg.
Hi. Why are you already laughing?
Now you're shy again. Why am I laughing? Because you're a hilarious person, and you just fucking like joked around for like half an hour before the podcast even like began. It's all on Patreon, by the way. But like, we talked about Randy Mulligan. We talked about Sweden.
I'll get there again. What am I supposed to, what am I supposed to say to hi?
Hello.
I didn't.
Yeah, it's good. Yeah. Okay. We're getting there. Like yeah, sure. Like I will teach you how conversations work. This is
okay. Thank you.
Yes, I will now mansplain.
The German will now explain how conversations work.
Oh my god, Germansplaining.
Oh my god.
Wow. Yeah, we're getting there.
Yeah, this is the 20th pun already.
Obviously, like after the show's over, people will know that there's no explaining conversation to you. Like you're really good at this. you're just acting like it. I can see it through your ruse. Mm-hmm. All right. But do tell me about So When Am I a Hero? I mean, I know how it came to be, but please do tell everyone else.
So I came into Lit RPGs pretty late. I think everyone I talk to is always talking about how they started years ago and they didn't even know what Lit RPG was. And they've been writing system books for years and years. And then they had to, you know, and then they came across Royal Row, blah, blah, blah. I started at the end. I read Cradle, as everyone does. And yeah, then everyone. I wanted to, you never read it? Okay, anyway, continue. So then I wanted to look up, like, is there more books like Cradle? And they're like, oh, you're talking about progression fantasy. I'm like, what is progression fantasy? And they're like, well, they're like Lit RPGs. I'm like, what are Lit RPGs? And they said, you should check out Dungeon Crawler Carl. And I'm like, okay, we'll see. And then I was immediately obsessed. I ate up every book he wrote. I went back and... I mean, and I'm not just talking about DCC. I went back and read every single thing he wrote. And I'm like, now you have to give me more. And so...
Wait. You're one of the people who actually read Kaiju Battle Surgeon?
I did. It's awful. I wanted to meet Matt Dinneman. And then I read that book. I'm like, I no longer want to meet Matt Dinneman. I love him. I love his work, but... I don't need to get deeper into his head. I'm fine with whatever comes out on the page in Dungeon Crawler Carl, and we can just stick from there. Yeah.
It's just
I've never anti-recommended a book before, but
it's
yeah.
I'm worried about Matt Dinneman because he's in Matt Dinneman's head
all mostly. The time. Yeah. The thing is, though, what's funny about that book is it did have some really poignant drama, and if you cut away all the horror and gore and body crap and horrible ceremonies, it did have some really good. His writing is great. His character arcs are top notch. You just want to know what happens, and it's like even as disgusting as it was, I kept wanting to keep going. But yeah, anyway, so I read all of Matt Dunham and stuff, and then I, you know, give me more. And so I started looking into Lit RPGs. I looked at the subreddit and I was like, oh, I need more of this. And then I thought, obviously, as a game writer, wow, this would be really cool to just kind of cut out the middleman and just write about, write a game rather than having to like deal with a team. And what was really cool, what really brought me to the community, I think, is the fact that writers and readers are so integrated. I've never seen such a tight-knit community where everyone's on a level playing field. Like, you can be a 14-year-old who just started writing. You can be a 60-year-old who's been writing for their entire lives. You can be...
Shout outs to Mizar and Sean.
Yeah, you can be amazingly prolific. You can be, I just started this as a hobby. Everybody comes onto it from an even playing field, and everyone is just excited and wants, I mean, sometimes a little too excited, too passionate, too critical. But for the most part, it's just so all-encompassing and enveloping in a way that I've never seen in other genre. And especially coming from a writer's side, it was just really exciting. And I thought, I need to get myself into this. And then one of the other things for me was that I've written a lot of fiction in my own time, and I will rewrite the first few chapters again and again and again and again, like other writers, until I finally get another idea, and then I'll go on to that and write it again and again and again. And then I thought, the thing is that if I'm doing a Lit RPG and I write a good enough chunk, I can put it online and people like it, I'm going to be at least forced to keep going without going back. And what's funny is, even before I put it online, I managed to harness that mindset in a way where I have now written more words than I've ever written in a single fiction that I've ever done. And it's really exciting. I've done some like little passes here and there as I've gone back, but for the most part, I haven't gone and changed major parts. I've managed to just keep going, and it's been really exciting. But for my own book, okay, sorry, I'm just like really rambling here.
That's good, because that's like the magic of Rural, right? Like, I mean, yeah. I did the same thing, and then I realized it sucks, and went back and rewrote. You shouldn't do that, because your stuff is actually good, like, and it's on market. So just keep doing it. So you were saying your own book.
Yeah. So for my own, the one thing though is that as I was reading, and it can obviously be from the Lit RPGs that I wanted to read. I'm really big into the System Apocalypse. I just like I like Portal Fantasies, which I guess I should like Isekais too, but I love the
Isekais.
How do you pronounce it?
Isekai.
Isekai. Oh, well, I'm sorry. I've only read the word. I don't
Oh yeah, Max. I listen to all your podcasts all the time.
I lost all my nerd cred immediately.
Yeah, yeah. Can you please have your card? No, okay.
I have a woman card here. Hold on.
Wait, what? Yeah, I need to put it in my binder.
It's my Hillary Clinton woman card.
Oh, geez.
Okay, sorry.
Yeah, because like the apolitical nature of this podcast, obviously. Sure.
Yeah.
Oh my god! I'm gonna put it in the binder joke. Like, wow, that's like meta.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
Your book.
Yeah. So, I love the standard modern fish out of water person in fantasy world. I've always liked that because it's just I'm not big on fantasy speech necessarily. You know, I love me some Game of Thrones and whatever, but I really like just the normal people talking and then being kind of what the hell about whatever world they're in. And so I wanted to write one of those. I already knew I wanted to write a System Apocalypse. But then I also wanted to, I should just come out here that I struggle with chronic depression. And so pretty much every book or every fiction I write myself always ends up coming back to how to find happiness when you get hit over the head again and again and again. And those are honestly my favorite stories, are just the people that manage to maintain their not even mental stability. Their mental stability can vacillate as much as what they want.
Your main character is not mentally stable.
No. But they persevere nonetheless. That they, yes, they still aim to survive. And whether they aren't sure why they want to or why they're doing it, that they continue on, and that the people that they meet as they move forward help them along, help them understand why they do what they do, and you know, how to care mm-hmm. in a way that they can't by themselves. Because their heart doesn't allow it. But if they can care for the people around them, if they can care for the world around them, that's what moves them forward. And I just really wanted to write about a main character. Like I said, all my books do that. So with A System Apocalypse, it just feels like it's just such a good marriage that having a character who has completely given up on life and would really rather it burn around her, sees it mm-hmm. fall to pieces around her, and mm-hmm. Now finds herself in a situation where she has to try in a way that she hasn't had to try before, and hasn't had to try for a long time, mm-hmm. and that it actually brings her catharsis in a way that life never could. Mm-hmm. And that's what I really wanted to write. So Helen is my badass main character who starts out as a complete hot mess. Well, okay. She is a complete hot mess. She doesn't really that doesn't change. Maybe it will. but she tries. And she's from Chicago, like I am, and Chicago crumbles around her, and then the system manifests, and she
I like how you said that the city crumbles around her, and then the system manifests, yeah. Which is very Chicago. Yeah, I like it. Yeah.
Oh no. that's it. So I like, I'll admit my system itself is not wholly original, but I knew that was not my strength. What I wanted to focus on were my strengths, which is my prose and my main character. And I knew if I created a main character that I adored and wanted to see, maybe not, I want to see her happy. That's all I want. And I'm going to knock her over the head again and again and again, and she'll have to get stronger and stronger, you know, inside, in order to persevere. And that's, like I said, cathartic. It's better than writing a diary.
Perhaps by Astra, right? There you go. I mean, like, write what you know, as they always say.
Well, every single author writes the same story over and over again. It's just got other layers squished on top of it.
I mean, like, if we're talking monomyth, yes, of course. But I think there are people that actually tell completely different stories. I mean, like,
a lot of their character struggles end up quite similar. You can always find the vein running through it, I feel. It may be...
That's true.
Buried or layered, but there's gonna, even if they try to do something completely different, there's gonna be a character or something that comes in that shows exactly what they are and always have been. And at first I worried about that, because you know, you don't want to obviously write the same thing over and over again, but I think what matters, obviously your story's gonna be different, your plot's gonna be different, your setting's gonna be different, and most people won't be able to tell, but the core, the heart, why the facet of yourself that you're trying to explore, whether you think this is an introspective endeavor or not, is still gonna show.
It's like, I can't stop thinking about this, because it's because, right, I'm writing the Torchbearer, like Meso Despresso story. And then Ban is like the complete opposite of this. But I mean, if you're talking about that, yeah, then yeah, of course, like across this fulcrum, like everything like changes, right? Mm. Sure. But then I don't know if it's the same story.
Not because, like, okay. Not the same.
The theme isn't the same. Like it's adjacent, it's yes. Like for Sam, it's she wants to kind of find out who she is, and in Band, it's more about like people getting the world to accept them as they are, right? I think that's not the same story.
Not the same, but definitely, it's something that interests you.
Yeah,
like those are still two connected things that are things that you feel like you need to explore.
Tell me a story that's not about a character understanding themselves better or presenting their own truth to the world.
Yeah, that's true.
Checkmate, atheists.
Well,
yeah,
you got me.
Yeah, no, without taking this back a little bit, because I really had to think about it, but there is a certain tone to it, to everyone's writing, right? Because everyone has like that same, like, you know, they like the prose or whatever. No, there's a reason why when you read like a Terry Pratchett novel, you read a Terry Pratchett novel. Like, mm-hmm. you know this. Right?
You, and it, you feel like you're style. Reading in a British accent, whether you know.
No.
English. No.
That's you. Sorry.
I mean, tell me you can't read Douglas Adams without, like...
Actually, no, I read Douglas Adams with a very, very weird mix of, like, German, English, and, okay. like, American accent in my head, because that's how I grew up. But, I mean, like, for me, to this day, it's very hard to understand, like, song lyrics. Mostly because I listen to death metal, but still. It's very...
What are they saying? Like, what are they screaming?
What are they screaming? Yeah. No, because like
I had a co-writer when I was working on the division who we would sit there writing, you know, dialogue, exposition, and I could hear out of his mic or out of his headphones this just deafening death metal. I'm like, how are you thinking? I don't understand how he was able to write while this was pounding into his soul.
I love writing to Trivium. It's so good. Like, they're so good. Like, give me Sin and a Sentence on repeat for 3 hours, and I will write you like five chapters.
That's so funny. It is. I can't amazing. Actually write to music. Or if I do, I do movie soundtracks or something way deep in the background, just so it's like a bit of an emotional layer. But I have to do it really, really quiet. I can't have lyrics.
I gotta have it blurring. If my skull isn't shaking, then nothing comes out. Like, okay, so both
just
both,
rattle those thoughts out.
Yeah. So you know what Casual Pharma and I have in common? Mm. It's not the success, because he's successful and I'm not. It's not the style, because he has some and I don't.
Is it the self-deprecating humor?
No, because he's actually got pretty good self-esteem. No, it's like that we both listen to Children of the Omnissiah out of the Mechanicus, Warhammer 40k Mechanicus soundtrack on repeat while we're writing stuff. It is so good. It just kind of makes like you're listening to it with your ears, but it thrums in your heart. It's wonderful. Wonderful soundtrack.
It's beautiful.
Yeah. So what's the best advice you've ever gotten as a writer?
Oh, you know, I knew that question was coming.
Yeah.
You know, I guess I could say, obviously they're the trait things like, you know, your characters need to be motivated or write what you know or anything. Mm-hmm. I had this, another coworker when I was working on Starlink, he's a screenwriter, and he told me to put in a joke about the second line of the game. And in this intro to the game is, their spaceship is attacked. There are spaceships flying in, bad guys shooting, someone, it looks like they've been kidnapped. They're all wondering whether they're going to survive. And some person says, how are you doing out there? And he told me to write a joke there. And I'm like, doesn't it feel like it's a serious situation? And he's like, well, yeah, but do you think she'd be serious? And I'm like, okay, well, maybe not this character, but maybe in this situation. He's like, no, she wouldn't be. Write a joke. Yeah. And so I had her be rather flippant and write, and what was so funny is this was the best project I worked on, because the dialogue that I put in, we did a text-to-speech, and it would get right in the game so that people could, obviously it was text-to-speech, so the emotion doesn't come across, but people could still, the developers could hear the dialogue as they're playing, which in a lot of games,
integrated development, what are you talking about?
Right, yeah, a lot of games you don't get that in until, I mean, years into the process, where this, it was so cool. I could write it, and then I would build it in an hour, my new dialogue would be in there. And I had not heard any feedback about my script at that point. After I did that, everyone came running up to my desk or emailing me or messaging me or just laughing to themselves about how they started listening to the dialogue and how they cared now. Mm-hmm. And all it took was that one dumb little joke. And he said, it doesn't matter what the situation, obviously it matters what the situation is, but the core of your writing will always be your characters and how they will deal with what is happening right now. The way that Shade, that's her name, deals is flippant sarcasm. It doesn't matter, and even in the most intense situation, she'll probably become even more flippant and more sarcastic. And that completely changed how I wrote dialogue. I always made people feel the way that I thought they ought to feel, not the way that people, and even like her feelings and what she says might be two different things too. It also showed me that levity and humor are not the opposite of drama and tragedy and emotion. And in fact, often emphasize it. And so I started really digging into my characters much more than I ever did before. And I always thought I was a good character person. I thought I was a good dialogue person. And I was-ish. But just that one piece of advice ended up just changing how I wrote. And it also made me so much more excited to write, even though I loved writing already, because suddenly these characters were so alive for me that I missed them. Like my Starlink characters, I miss so much. and it made the voice actors feel like they loved the characters so much. They felt so passionate about it. And it came through the way that they did the lines and the feedback we got from the game. People have always been kind of whatever about narratives. And in this one, a lot of times if your narrative works for a game, people just won't mention it. and I was really surprised to see that in a kid's game about spaceship shooting in space, that people actually mentioned the dialogue. It was really exciting. Since then, especially with this book, for instance, I knew that if I did a character that was always real and true to herself and funny, that I'd be able to tell the story I want.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it would always be exciting.
Absolutely. I love the idea of having some sort of internal kind of like core truth, or something called the core lie that people tell themselves, right? And it's often connected to their core wound too, right? So something happened. And so that means that they now want something, they have a lack or a need, and then they try to get that need solved, and they tell themselves a lie about, like, if I only do X, then this need will be solved. This is how people work. Mm-hmm. This is how, like, human civilization works in general. Can be good, can be bad, but humans kind of need that. Like, they need a reason to do things, apparently. Doing things. And then bringing in the sarcasm and bringing in the humor is, in a way to protect that lie from getting exposed. Because once the lie is exposed, other people can point it out and go, like, that's not true. And then you have to change, and that's bad.
That's why, honestly, every time I see somebody I think is remarkably funny, I always wonder what's wrong. Because you're generally there's a reason that you developed your humor. And it's not generally just because I just feel like being a funny person.
Some people maybe as a kid.
Yeah. Right. I was bullied. I was a nerd. But often, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, like,
that's why adults. Funny nerds are the best.
Yes.
Why we talk sad about Brittany Mulligan so much. Just, yeah.
Yeah. But I mean, in the end, out of the crucible of our childhood, we emerge. and we are but fully formed people, not yet imprinted with the tragedies of life. I like lyricism. Anyway, yes. Cool, there's like maybe there's something wrong with them, quote unquote, but maybe not, right? Maybe they just, you know, grew up like this and then they settled themselves and they found, like, yeah, they were kind of dumb. I shouldn't have, like, learned how to be humorous because of that reason. But now I really like being humorous, so why not? Right? So sure. I think that's like you can tell those people. You can always tell those people. You can always tell about if someone is, like, funny to get attention, or if they're funny because they just like being funny and entertaining people.
Well, why do they like entertaining people?
Because it feels nice. It's
it
a
feels
human
nice
need.
To make people happy.
Yeah. It's a human, yeah. basic human need. Like I have a mentor, an agile coach mentor, who said, like, he has this wonderful line. I don't even know where he took it from. But he said that helping other people is very selfish. Right? Because you're doing it because it makes you feel good. Right, so you're going out, you're helping people, and it's super selfish in a way, right? Because you're doing it, so it feels nice. And then he was like, and that means that accepting help is a selfless act. And I was like, damn it, Jeff.
Who said this?
Jeff Watts.
Was that
real dude, yeah.
No, I know, but like a philosopher or like what kind
no,
of...
No, he's an agile coach.
Okay, because I was like, in my philosophy class, we also, there was some philosopher, I can't remember, who talked exactly about how everything that you do is for your own pleasure, whether that be helping people, wanting to make people happy, blah, blah, blah. It's always for, and it's always selfish. Isn't, and I...
Yeah.
Yeah, I remember getting quite angry, actually.
No, it's true.
It humans is, but yeah.
I mean, like the cool part about humans is that unless you have like some sort of like severe neural like disability or like neural damage, human needs are at least in like groups of 50 people. Your needs are balanced in a way that they maintain the stability of the group, the tribe. Right? I want food, so I'm going to go out and I'm going to grab berries, but I also want to mate, so I'm bringing back some berries and then sharing them so people see that I'm cool, so I'm getting followers. Right? This whole thing stops once you get to farming and like cities over 500 people and like metropolises and kingdoms and companies that run over like 5,000 people, because then suddenly if you're the guy with the biggest berries, sure, everyone loves you, but you can't think for 5,000 people. You can't be chieftain of that group. So you have to like act against your nature. And that's the Azure coaching part of the podcast. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, like, yeah. So if you were to distill that down, that advice that you got, to one sentence. Could you do that?
Oh, goodness. Yeah, I mean, I guess think about your character's core truth first. And we had a, I actually had a checklist. It was like a, because I, with video game writing, we do a lot of writing in the background, but ultimately it's all dialogue. It's all dialogue. And especially with this game, Starlink, we had a dozen, I think, playable characters. Like, because you could switch out the pilots for the, and each one had about 4,000 lines of dialogue. So I had to write, they would say the same fit, like if they wanted to say, okay, let's go to this planet or whatever.
Yeah,
but then I had to write it for 12 different people and whatever they, however they would say it. And that came to be a little difficult for the people who were naysayers or like didn't want to do stuff. But then I had to find like, whatever, I guess we're going, you know, like I had to find out how to, you know, and, well, and it made a lot of the characters who were like, really didn't want to do anything. Like when I had to do the Star Fox characters and I wrote Falco, I had a blast because Falco was just a dick throughout the whole thing. And it was so funny how I had to like translate a lot of like my gung-ho peppy little cartoon lines to like Falco. It was fun. I wanted every single character. I didn't want a single line to be the same. I wanted all of them to be different. And I forgot how I started this when I started talking about all the different lines. We had a checklist. And the checklist would talk about their emotional situation, like, or the current situation. And you'd say, the current situation is they are driving a ship across a planet and trying to get this thing over here. And you're like, how do they feel about that situation? It's like, well, bored, honestly, because that's a really long trip. Or like excited because that's a long trip, but there might be monsters to fight. Or, you know, and so you look at like what their emotional truth is when it comes to this. And then it's that, and then we say, I can't remember all the checklist things, but it was like, how are they feeling in this moment because of what's happened recently? So it's like, well, Shade hasn't had her coffee yet. So like, you know, or like Levi forgot to go to the bathroom, you know, or you come up with a, you know, and then you add that to it. And then you say, okay. And then you do the simple checklist, like, well, what's their jargon? What's their expertise? Because somebody who's like, you know, a pilot might say something different than like a teenage kid. And then you say, what's their slang? You know, what state
what
are they from?
What about teenage kid pilots?
Yeah. What country are they from? You know, and then you just kept going down this checklist. And by the time you get, I mean, even like within checklist number three, you're already coming up with completely different dialogue. But it was just, it all drills down to thinking about your character and digging deep into who they are in every individual moment and never straying from that. And what's funny though is that we could still do the story and the plot was the exact same even with how varied these characters were. We just had to come up with why they were going to do what they were doing within that like 7-word sentence that I had.
Exactly right. You could write so like the external plot, absolutely right. You could find a reason why, for example, let's assume like Dungeon Crawler Carl is about Bugs Bunny instead, which could be very interesting, right? And like you could do that. You could totally do that, like this like semi-immortal demigod with bunny ears, like who can never get hurt, descends down this dungeon just for shits and giggles, and says, hey, I talk a lot, right? That could still be a thing. You don't have to have the whole, like, Carl, like, you won't break me thing. You can follow anyone else.
Well, and that's, a lot of the time, when I first started writing my own fiction, my character would end up sacrificing them for the plot, sacrificing themselves for the plot a lot. I wanted this to happen in the plot. I knew my character probably wouldn't do it, but whatever. Okay, they can just like, kind of go along with it, you know?
Right. Lieben.
I know. But the thing, like, you really can get every character to do the thing you want. You just have to give them the reason that they're doing it, and you can always just bring in a third party or. Bring, you know, like they don't like, I mean, why would they want to go to a doctor or something? And it's like, well, some people don't want to go if they're hurt, but they want to go if somebody else is hurt, or if they want to go because they want to go scream at the doctor because they hate the medical, like, the pharmaceutical company. Like they like, there's so many reasons why you might be able to get them to go there, even if it's all completely different reasons, because like, damn it, I want them to go to a hospital.
Like it's, it's less about like giving them a reason, right? It's about finding one.
Yeah.
Right.
And once you do that, like it makes it, what's really fun, like I've up until now, I've always been a plotter. I plot. I would write out scene for scene. And what would end up happening is I would get bored and then move on to my next thing. So
Relatable.
with video games, a lot of the time, what we would do is you come up, because you know that this is going to be a franchise. You're going to have to keep putting them in situations, whether this is what you plan for or not. And so you come up with what you try to, a core TV premise, so you come up with your core characters, your core setting, the premise, the theme, and then it kind of ends up carrying itself, so long as you have a few dramatic, what we call wow points along the way. As soon as you come up with your core character's truth and you know exactly what drives them and you know exactly what you're going to do, you end up, it doesn't exactly write itself, but you find yourself in situations or surprised by situations that you maybe didn't anticipate in the first place. And while you can still reach that wow plot point and you know that you can get there, the way, the journey that they take to get there will be, it will surprise you as a writer, which makes, I mean, for me, keeps me excited, but it also keeps it so true to your characters that your readers will feel like they're following them on an actual journey rather than just a story that you plotted out. And that, at least on this endeavor, has worked out really well for me.
I wish we had this conversation like 5 years ago, because I told you about Flower, Wish, and Blood, right? I think you read that at some point, like the vampire story in Berlin I wrote, and that was completely derailed because my main characters were like, I don't want to do that. No. What are you doing? It's like, no, you don't understand. Like, this has to be in there because there's like so much more cool shit coming. Like, yeah, so what? So like finding out these entire like motivations and who these people really are first is very, very, very helpful. It's still hard sometimes because you write it down and you forget, and then you need to like reread all the time, and like, I just want to write a fight scene, and that's the cool thing about Railroad again, because you can just write a fight scene if you want to. As long as it doesn't take a few.
Well, and it's not to say that I've read some amazing books where the plot is so on point and the characters are just kind of cardboard, and I'm okay with that sometimes, depending on, I mean, if the plot is so damn good that I want to keep reading, like It depends on whatever your strength is. I found that this is what works for me.
Exactly.
My partner likes to call it, method acting. He calls it method writing. I just get really into the head of my character, and it feels like role-playing, which is perfect for a little RPG.
Exactly. So, like, for me, people often tell me, like, Max, you would make such a really, really good dungeon master. And I'm like, that's very true, but the problem is that there's players who don't do what I tell them. because like writing an RPG, writing books for me tickles that same itch, except that everything just kind of like goes to plan, and I can have all those cool plot moments, right? So I'm a party of 10 myself. I'm okay. But one last thing for the character thing, if you're like starting out, or if you haven't checked this out yet, I mean, obviously, like, Secrets of Story is really good. But also Art of Character by David Corbett. I often recommend that book. And the last thing last, it's okay if you want to completely overdraw characters. Because I think sometimes we often believe that our characters need to be like all nuanced and everything, right? And I don't think I've written a better and more believable character than Waverly, who is completely out of her mind, ADHD werewolf. Like, it's just easy because, like, sometimes by overdrawing the character, and you think you're overdrawing, but you're not even like you're not even reaching comedic levels yet. Like, you're not writing Bugs Bunny when you're thinking about writing Bugs Bunny. You have to try to write Bugs Bunny.
Yeah. Well, that was a thing for me is when. Like, again, when I first started writing dialogue, I thought, well, if I make it sound real, if I make it sound, you know, organic, then that's what good dialogue is. And it's like, no, that's what, like, passable dialogue is. Because we don't want real. We still want that extreme, like, you know, everyone is a little bit 110% themselves.
We want the hyper-real.
Yeah.
We want the hyperreal. We want not the real. We want the simulacrum that we believe reality to be.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Thanks, Foucault. I feel like I need a peck of gulas for this. Anyway, this podcast has been very postmodern. But yeah. Tell me one thing that you learned, aside from the like character writing thing. Mm. Sorry. One thing that you learned and that you're now doing differently. Or would do differently with on the next book.
Like one thing I've learned as I'm doing this one?
Yes. Or in general, one thing that you've learned that is like, yeah. The first thing is like advice you got, and then the second one is kind of like one thing that you really like you learned. We kind of talked about both, but just hit me with another one.
Let's see. Man, there are so there are so many things I learn and then want to do immediately differently. I mean, at least for this book, it's not the writing part; it's the lit RPG part. I sure wish I had thought about the system a little bit more before I started going. I had the luck stat in there at first, and then I'm like, what is a luck stat? Hold on. And then I remember talking to you guys and you're like, if the luck stat doesn't do anything, then why do you have it? I'm like, God damn. And I had already written out like the way that the points work. So I was like, okay. Yeah. So I'm just going to have to go back through it because some of it is in my tables and then some of it is actually in the exposition. So I had to go back and redo it. And then I stupidly decided that all of my monsters and everything have like an actual point number. I have a spreadsheet. I have like because I decided to actually math this. I'm bad at math. That was my second comment I got is how bad I am at math. And so now if I decide to go back and do a fight, I'm like, oh, crap. So what level are they at now?
God.
I did this to myself and it's too late. And it's okay so long as I never look back.
Yeah, just like keep failing forward. It'll sort itself out at some point. Oh God, I had one guy in chapter, I think, 7. I was writing chapter 80, 90, right? And I put up chapter 30 and someone was like, hey, your math's off here, like, but 10 points. I'm like, no, it's not. Like, experience points are off by like, or the logic, right? And because like the logic is like both the stuff, like it's the stuff that you buy new stuff with. And your experience bar, basically. And I've timed it so that like it's very, very tight the entire time. So that it doesn't feel like the main character is like too OP. That meant I had 10 too many. 10 not enough. So that like the next 15 things wouldn't work. And I fretted about it. I was like, oh my God, what am I doing? And then I was like, I can just give this guy 5 more and this guy 5 more and we're good. And it was like 2 days. It took me 2 days because that's how bad. Like that's how math terrifies me.
Yeah, one of the fun things though is that I have kind of because I've decided to do that. I've kind of pigeonholed myself in a way where going back to like how characters would deal with things and plot surprising me. Like I wrote out the math. I already knew how much XP people, like monsters, depending on which different levels and everything, they're going to get. And I got to this part where I have the big bad boss that they're going to do. And I knew how much time they had left in order to level up to get to that boss. And I realized there is no way they were going to get to the level that they needed to be. And at first I was like, maybe I'll pad the numbers here or something. And then I was like, no, in fact, they're not going to be the right level and it's going to suck. And then that's just how I moved on. And that's actually been a lot of fun is just kind of dealing with, I'm like, well, I didn't give them like a good item here. Oh, well, I guess they just don't have something here. Or I'm like, I guess this
is good.
Yeah. I'm like, I guess this power, like I've got this retreat power. I'm like, it doesn't work vertically, does it? Or like, because if they retreat, they go to straight line. Like they can retreat 3 meters back. They almost like teleport. Yeah. But I wanted her to go like this and then go up a foot. So instead I have her go like this and then just trip backwards because it doesn't, you know, and it's just really fun to like put myself, I'm like, I didn't think about this, but I'm going to try to use that as like, oh,
and,
well.
And like- And like I think that makes the book so like believable because we love our darlings, we want to protect them, right? Especially in, you know, the numbers go up genre where we're like main character is always like Mary Sue, but the system really shouldn't, especially in System Apocalypse. It's called System Apocalypse, not a system coddling party, right? So the system doesn't give a fuck. It's like, yeah, no, you can't go up. And then, like, the cool part about it is, like, you can have the characters show how cool they are by tripping and then doing it.
Yeah. My characters cool. mess up a lot. They'll get to the point where they know what to do. But I also wish I'd done, there's so many systems where the system itself seems to have a bit of an attitude or motivation itself. And I at least don't have that in at this point, and I almost wish I did a little bit, but
who was it? Was it Sasha or was it Sam or Andy who wrote the system that hadn't systemed before and was like all apologetic, like, oh, I'm sorry, it's my first apocalypse. I'm gonna try to do better next time.
But it's like I was just reading the Bog Standard, and I immediately the first time. It happens in like chapter 3 or something where the goddess comes in to, you know, say something. And I was like, oh, man, that's really cool, isn't it? I don't have anything like that. You know, and it's like, and of course, I'd already read Dungeon Crawler Carl where it's like the AI is a character in itself. But yeah, maybe.
Yeah.
Like I said, I didn't give I was so into this idea of my character having to go through System Apocalypse that I didn't really think about the system itself. But
you know what time it is? That's right. It's a new ad. And this time I have two amazing stories for you to check out. First one is my friend Saving Throw, who writes a story called So When Am I a Hero? It's a System Apocalypse that is quite frankly amazing. I don't like System Apocalypse usually, and I devoured that one, so go and check it out. There's a link below the podcast. The second one is from another friend of mine, because I have two friends, called The Infinity Dungeon by Reject Humanity. Premise is actually pretty cool. Guy goes hiking on the Appalachian Trails and stumbles into the only and first dungeon in the world, and he's the only person on Earth with a system, at least for a while. Alright, go check him out. I appreciate it a lot, and I'll see you next time. Yeah. I kind of want to talk about DC for a second here again, because there's something, someone just noticed something. You know how Facebook is like giving you these like algorithm things, right? Mm-hmm. And so there's this like fantasy, like huge, gigantic fantasy group on Facebook. And everyone in there is talking about Dr. Cola Carl. Like everyone. And I'm like, okay, that's very interesting. And like DC like sold crap ton of novels, like some, like he's outsold like some Sandersons, right? Which is insane.
Serious? Wow.
Yeah, I mean he's at 16,000 ratings, even higher, and now he's like going in there. And I think the future will be very, very bright for us. right? Because people aren't getting into the genre. And let's be honest, like if you're like a traditional fantasy reader, you know, like you're reading with a monocle anyway, right? And most of the stuff that we read, we're like, oh man, this is really cool because, you know, the system is cool, all the main character has attitude or whatever, or there's a cute cat. Doesn't really pass their high standards yet. So, yeah. I mean, like, fuck it for me. Sometimes it doesn't either. Like, I read something and I'm like, doesn't really hook me. Like, it takes a while for me to hook, for me to get hooked on a good book.
There does seem to be an obsession with a lot of, I see this a lot on the subreddit and whatnot, where people are like, well, what's a system that hasn't been done? And because then I have to do that, or what has somebody not become yet, or what is somebody, you know? And it's like, it sometimes you need to maybe dial back the unique part, like, because you might get too,
it ain't gonna
focused on that the actual story and characters and stuff are so far on the back burner that it, no matter how interesting your magic system is, you know, it's not gonna, yeah, no one's gonna see it drive forward.
Yeah, I mean, like, story has to come first. The system can be as interesting as you want. If people don't have a good vehicle to like look at the system through with whatever, it's going to be super hard to get them interested in it, right? You could be writing the best system in the world.
Yeah.
But if your main character is like, I don't know, uninspired, has like, doesn't want to do anything, and in general has like the attitude of like a 4-year-old, but thinks he's the coolest, and at the same time has like no redeeming traits, then, well, yeah.
It was funny when I first started writing it, and I looked back at Dungeon Crawler Carl again, and I was looking at the wiki, and I was like, wait a second, he doesn't use any of these the powers and items and stuff he gets in like book one and book two. It's like they completely, yeah, you know, and it's okay that it's not, you know, I just see so many complaints about like, well, why aren't, you know, the people who care deeply about the logic and deeply about cohesion and you know, deeply about the system itself. And it's like, yes, but I mean,
it's about the bestseller thing.
like that's not crunchy at all.
yeah. It's like, it's about getting the thing. It's not about using it.
Yeah.
Right. It's
or using it in the one fight that you needed to use it. You know, he always, all of his things come into play in the book that they're introduced. And then it's not necessarily, it's like, you know,
it's MacGyver all over again. Hello, Miss Knight. We have built into your car a device that allows you to contact dolphins while you're floating in the air 5,000 meters above sea level, but only in this specific instance. Thank you. I will definitely never need this, but thank you. And then, oh my God, I'm floating 5,000 meters over the air. I go, I need to contact dolphins. Who would have thought? Like,
Yeah.
So I don't know, like it's also about the dopamine hit, because like, hey, cool, like chest opens, you get a cool item, awesome. I always like poke fun at Raven's Dagger, because in book one, Kat gets like a cool new arm and has a rocket launcher, and she never uses that rocket launcher, like never, like not even once. And Raven was like, yeah, I don't know, I just put it in there because it was cool, and then I don't know, forgot about it. Like, that's also the other thing. Like, people don't understand, like, even Matt Dinneman, especially if you're writing, like, serialized or whatever, you're writing to entertain first and foremost, and you're not writing to, like, correctly utilize the resources you have available. Because then it's a cookbook.
Yeah.
And not the anarchist kind.
I can't tell you how disappointed I was. Like I said, I was reading Bog Standard last night, and it gets to the point where he gets all this XP, and then it says that he doesn't get any of the XP. I was so disappointed. I was like, what?
Miles!
Brain psychology is so stupid. I'm like, I didn't know he killed them. Then it said he killed them. Then it said he was going to get XP. I'm like, woo! And then it's like, he's not going to get XP. I'm like, damn it! I need to keep breeding to make sure he gets that XP.
And this is how they get you.
I know.
Not RPG, not even once.
Oh my gosh, it's so funny.
Yeah, I mean, like maybe Miles can be your nemesis. I already have one, so.
It's really good. I hadn't read it before.
Yeah.
I stayed up too late last night.
I'm so sad that I didn't get to rep him. Like it's such a fucking good story.
Yeah.
Because like he has fun writing it, and it's in general, it's a very good story. But okay, tell me about one book that you love and why is it awesome. You got 3 minutes.
Does it have to be a lit RPG?
No. Like, you can talk about any book you like. Any book you love. Starlink. The Starlink logbook.
Oh, man. This is going to... Okay. I don't know why I'm blanking. My favorite series is The Magicians.
Okay.
Lev Grossman, The Magicians. It's the only series where I read all three, and then I just went right back to the first and read them all again.
Ooh,
I have read them over and over and over again. And the TV show I've seen like four times over, except for the last season, because I don't like the last season very much. As I've said, the journey of somebody who's deeply depressed finding their way forward through a world that makes no sense and keeps hitting them over and over and over again is just dear to my heart, and that is the Magicians to a T. The main character Quentin is deeply, deeply depressed and messed up. And it's funny, there are a lot of people who cannot get through the first book because they're like, Quentin's not a good guy. I'm like, he's not a bad guy. He's just not. Yeah, no, he's definitely like his internal monologues, like it's all in third person, but it's like very like close third person. So some of the things he says are just absolutely appalling. And it's so real. I've never read a main character that felt that deeply real. It just, and to the point where I'm like, it's difficult as an author sometimes when you want your character to say something that you don't believe, and you don't have the ability to put in a disclaimer saying like, but this is not like, I don't think this is what, you know, especially for Quentin, he has a lot of thoughts about women that are, and about his girlfriend and what she ought to be doing or what, like, the whole thing starts with him pining over this girl who has essentially friend zoned him, and he thinks she owes him, and he is a complete jerk. And I'm just like, I just want to give Lev Grossman so much credit for being able to put that on a page and then put it in publish and not do 17 interviews saying, but sweet God, that's not me. I swear to God, it's not. Because I think a lot of people might think, and maybe, I don't know, maybe it is. But I, no, that's...
probably not.
The tone of that book too, the style, it's so conversational. He showed me too that you don't always need to come up with a good word for something. You need to come up with an accurate word for something. And I always thought, you know, open up the thesaurus and try to come up with the most precise word. And it's like, well, but is that, you know,
so
like, for instance, like Helen might not know the make of a car.
Yeah.
So saying, wow, that's a sweet Toyota, whatever, you know, that's the most precise thing, but is she going to know that? No, she's going to be like, that's a nice fancy ass car, whatever the frick it's called. Like, and then you can put that just like with hyphens in between, and then that's the word she comes up with for the car. And it's like, that's what he showed me in his prose that, I think he describes a horse as having horsey boredom. And I was like, that, yeah. I like that. Yeah. Like, it's like, that's the dumbest thing he could have written, but I see it. Like, those big walnut eyes looking at you with horsey boredom. I just, I don't know. I'm obsessed with that series.
It's really good. I, like what you're telling me, I haven't read it yet. I'm actually looking at it. But I have so many new books I need to get
through. You said you've seen the show, but haven't.
Did I?
No. I don't know.
I haven't.
Oh, okay. The show's really good, too.
For me right now, like I'm still like, I feel like I'm still coming out of this burnout like a couple of years ago. Like the only things I can really watch are like if it's more exciting and there's more drama than in the British Bake Off, I'm out.
Fair.
The most exciting thing I've watched recently was Spy Family, like Spy X Family.
So I go through phases where I'm like, I need just comedy. And I will not stray, and not like dramatic comedy where people like community level comedy where I'm just like, I'm not going to watch anything. You know, I still can't watch The Sopranos or something. You know, people keep telling me, oh, this is so good. It's devastating. I'm like, well, why? No. Like, I don't want to watch something.
Breaking Bad is the best show I've ever watched.
Yeah. Oh, Breaking Bad took me so long to get into. I did. get into it and I did like it, but I watched the first episode and I was just so depressed I turned it off.
Exactly. So by the way, I still have to say Breaking Bad is the best show I've ever watched, except for maybe The Wire. If you get the reference, then I haven't watched Breaking Bad. I also haven't watched The Wire because I know I'm in for like 15 hours of like heartbreak and depression. I'm like,
It can be really hard to get into that. Yeah,
I don't need to have that in a series.
Yeah.
Totally I know fair. That how that feels, but yeah. Again, I'm also like one of the guys who like I can't watch any like blooper videos or whatever. Like I'm just like the Fremdschämen is like way too high. Like, oh my god, the poor dude, that must feel so terrible. And all around me, people are like, ah, it's so funny. He hit himself in the nutsack with a ladder. I'm like, yeah, that must have hurt.
I gotta say, journalism bloopers are like some of my favorite reels, especially as someone who decided not to go into it.
I watched like professionals kind of, you know, like on screen go like, okay, fuck up. There's one in German and it's old and there's this like really not nice kind of TV comedy guy who made a song about that one sentence and it's so catchy. And she was narrating about the weather, right? And she starts it off with translated, look behind me, that's some like flowers because like spring is here finally. Go outside, do naughty things, like for example, eating ice cream or cleaning your apartment. And then he like makes a like rap song out of it. She like kind of like, she really, really went out there with like, go outside and do naughty things. And then she like caught herself like in the same second, like, oh shit.
My favorite was somebody who was they were talking about getting spanked as a kid and the person goes, did you get spanked as a kid? And she goes, as a child, no. And the guy just stares at her. She's like, no, that's not, no. That's what I could watch that on repeat. As a child, no.
No, what are you talking about? I'm gonna tell you one in the bonus material that I can't put that on YouTube. But all right. Cool. Shout outs. Oh, I forgot, you have no friends.
I don't.
if you think I'm an asshole, yes, probably. But also, you didn't catch the start of the Patreon stuff, so you should check that out. I'm now doing the thing that Lev Grossman should have done. I'm going into interviews and like, I'm not the kind of person, I'm sorry. So, okay. Shout outs.
Sorry. I...
Well,
I know. I'm just embarrassed by the fact that I really don't have anybody except for our writers group.
That's enough.
Okay, great. Because these are all people I'm shouting out, like, on my book in, like, the next week.
That's okay.
Okay, then, yeah.
I mean, like, we can finally get the bingo card complete again. I talked about agile coaching, and now we can talk about Merchant Crab.
We can talk about, oh, yeah, Merchant Crab. Yeah, that's the, yeah, obviously, I love Merchant Crab. I love Heretical Fishing, Halox Heretical Fishing. I just started Miles Bog Standard, obviously, which I am already newly obsessed with. JTB, Son of Flame, his... just JTB himself, I really like. So I do say this in my shout-out that I think I put out today. That I, as like in somebody who is going to go into journalism, I am such a sucker for people who are writing their own deep experience. Like, that was the fun part about being a journalist, is I could go around and ask people intense questions about their lives and jobs. And I got to know about so many integral things that you just don't, like, you wouldn't know. I mean, and so I love when people write from their own experiences. So having like a firefighter write about, and then you add magic, because fighting monsters. Yeah. And I think everybody's experience, whether you be a firefighter or a lawyer or a journalist or whoever, if you're going to write a book, add monsters and magic, and I will read it.
And like, you make it sound like being a journalist is basically going around like putting a microphone in people's faces and going like, "Why does your life suck?"
I mean, yeah, which is one of the reasons I stopped. Like, there you go. One of the bloopers I was actually going to mention, it was our own alum who a family's kid was about to go on death row. It was like one of the youngest people, and so he had like his editor makes him go with a camera crew knocking on their door to ask them how they feel on the day that he's going to be executed or something. Holds a mic, and the woman opens the door and just throws a bucket of water on him. Like, she was clearly just, and it was just, so we just watched this clip of him getting doused in water, and everyone was laughing, and I'm like, I can't do that. I don't think you should do that. I can't do that. So
no one wins in this scenario.
No, yeah.
No one.
Well, and then we talked about, like, there was a success story where somebody actually, a success story, and that a journalist actually sat down with a family, and like they invited him into his house while they watched the execution and everything. And like the dad had to go out and buy a coffin at the same time. And I was like, and they're like, I ended up this really heartwarming. I'm like, what? No.
I don't know, man. Like, it's yeah. I don't know. It feels dirty.
Yeah. Like I said, that's why I went to games journalism. Everyone wants to talk about their video games. Nobody wants to talk about their sad.
And this is why I talk to authors about books, right?
Yeah.
And then you have like someone come in. Well, this all started when my wife died. I'm like, oh god, no. No, no one did that yet.
I swear, like, this is why I read fantasy and stuff, because I'll look at the bestseller list and I'm like, okay, what do I want to read? And they're like, after his brutal defeat of, you know, his wife's brutal defeat after cancer, he had to go to the war with that. And I'm like, no, 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 no. And they're like, okay, Jane's dysfunctional family. No. Like, go to the next one. And they're like, when he was diagnosed with leukemia. No. Like, why are you all horrible?
And I love the fact that, like, Dungeon Crawler Carl comes in this like candy colored package, and it is absolutely tragic.
Well, see, that's what I don't understand, is because I can't read about someone's cancer wife when they go off to the Civil War or whatever. But if you tell me that the book starts with 9 billion people dying or whatever, and I'm just like, that sounds really good.
Because the human mind can't comprehend it.
I can't comprehend statistics. I remember being absolutely blown away by Battlestar Galactica's pilot when they just freaking destroyed billions of people in one fell swoop. I was so blown away. I'm like, this is my jam. I never...
Yeah. It's like But as a German, I have to say that this is even problematic. But no, like I don't want to make this all like espresso depresso, but they have certain battlefields here in Europe. They transformed them into, well, basically giant graveyards. And for each and every soldier that died, they put up one cross. And you can go there and you can look at just the insane fucking number. Yeah. And I now know what 100,000 people look like, right? So when you're reading it, it doesn't deter from your like enjoyment of the story, yeah. obviously. But I always find it a bit interesting because like Matt is in DCC, he's just so good about mixing his spinach in his smoothie. Like it's like he wants to write about horrible human people.
Yeah.
He wants to write about like there being no hope and the endless the post-apocalyptic kind of what's not diaspora but like despair-filled yeah. world that we're all delving into because of our media consumption obsession with fame. But also, there's funny cats.
Yeah. Well, and that's the thing. Like, I am okay. Obviously, I really like tragedy. I like drama. I like the struggle. That's what I told you why I'm writing.
Yeah.
But I like it with the not a veneer, because I do like it being honest and authentic, but what I can't stand are people just sitting around in a darkly filtered room sobbing about it. That's what I can't take. And that's why these books that start with that, I'm like, unless it's like, and then he went on a magical journey with a dragon, like I don't want to read about it. I don't want to read about him just being sad and not being able to get his shit together.
Oh, you mean like, you know, like literary fiction where people, you know, have like deep spiritual turmoil for like 15 pages while they're like 500 pages while they're working on a field in like southern Arkansas.
Yeah.
And nothing happens except that they have like inner turmoil and they work through it.
Yeah.
You should read Torchbearer. No. Okay. So continuing the shout out journey though. Mizar's story are actually pretty good. He wrote several, right? Necrologia Chronicles and then Shapestealer. And he kind of like always starts them and then they didn't really perform to his expectations and he stops them at the end of the first book. I mean, they're good. Like they're well-ended books. He actually finished like most of these stories. I just really wish for him to be happy. But you go, what's the next one? Shout out?
I haven't all my friends?
We have more than that. We got Host. We got Seth.
Yes, yeah.
Media Maker, together with Jonathan McLean. That's going to be nice. Have you not
John McLean?
Seen that? Jonathan McLean.
Oh.
With an H.
Oh, yes. Oh, my gosh. Yeah, of course. I'm like, I just... My problem is that I think my reading list in this week has totally exploded. I have so many things that I was joking on the Discord that I need to make reading my full daytime job because there are just so many things to read. That looks awesome. That's the Audible. I don't listen to books. I've never done the Audible thing, and I think I need
what?
To. I know, and that's like a deep sin with lit RPGs, and I think I need to get into it because I do not have time to read all this.
You need okay. I mean, like, there's so many good books. Yeah. Cradle actually is all right. Like, there are many books that are just well better when you read them, right? But you owe it to yourself to at least listen to the first half hour or hour of Dungeon Call of Carl. Because I love all the 14 different voice actors. That's just Jeff Hayes.
Yeah, I have heard that. I know.
Yeah. Like it's insane. Like it's literally his masterpiece. Like he gels with a thing like no one
else.
Well,
now he's
like,
got that whole...
The audio immersion tunnel?
Yeah.
That too, yeah, cool. But like I love that too. That's amazing, right? Don't get me wrong, it's really, really great. Like Heath Miller as an announcer for like the tutorial, great. But the original one is literally just like Jeff flexing. Yeah. Like it's entire flex.
The master voice actors like that, they're always just astounding. I love looking at credits and seeing like how many different voices people do when I just watch like a cartoon or anime or whatever, and it's just like you know. Or I mean, I got to obviously I met so many voice actors at my job that being in the booth and seeing them do a, like they're talking to you, just jamming or whatever, and then they read the line and you just burst out laughing because they're like, that's not you. I saw your mouth moving, but that's not you.
Oh, wait. Okay. So wait, we were like way over time already, but more shout outs because we got friends. We got Mizar. Luca.
Luca.
Yeah, so Reject Humanity on Railroad, and he, oh my god, what's his latest one?
Yeah, because him and Old Folks just came out with their new stuff.
Yeah. By the time this podcast releases, Old Folks will have written like two more, so don't worry about it.
What the heck? I think we started writing Lit RPGs at the same time. I am just launching one
I
have...
You started writing a lit RPG.
That's what I'm saying.
Sean started writing lit RPGs.
I think he's written like 30 or something. And
books.
It's insane.
He has written. You both started the same at like almost the same day, right? Yeah. He has written since then. Three books in Goblin. Two books in the Warrior Family story that like didn't really do anything, but three in the Goblin story. Dawn of the Last Dragon Rider, Ultimate Level 1, 3 books. Dawn of the Last Dragon Rider, 3 books. The Viking story now.
The Viking one is just coming out, yeah. I think it was just yesterday he said he had a bad day. He only wrote 8,000 words. I'm like, I need to block you.
his power went out. It was like Divine Intervention. God was like, no. No, Sean. Like, this is it.
And he still did it. Like that would be a good week for me, which this is why
like Luca's new story with the amazing premise where it's this guy who finds like a dungeon in the Appalachian Trails, like goes down there and he comes back out and he's like the only guy with a system in the real world. That's so cool. That's called the infinite dungeon (lit RPG) and by Reject Humanity. Who are we missing? We got JTB, we got Seth, we got Mayor isn't really writing right now.
I can't open my Discord right now because it just gets mad at me.
let me check. Baba. Owl Another World should be done soon. if you listen to this this Zeusified,
get out there!
We're waiting. We love you to pieces, but you literally started five stories, and every single time you say like, "Oh no, this is
and
the one."
And he's so good.
And he's also so nice. Like, just let us love you, fucking damn it.
Yeah. Right.
This is a long shout out.
Just paralyzed by our own standards sometimes.
Oh yeah, my god! I think he left the standard like somewhere on like Mount Fuji and just up there, and he just doesn't get them down anymore. Brian Norton just released an audiobook of Quest Academy 2, and he just handed in Quest Academy 3. So Quest Academy 3 is done, so it needs to be edited, and then it's gonna be out soon. It's gonna be nice. Who else? Oh, well, Sasha, we were talking about messy, depressing stories.
Okay.
Yeah. So Rasha Sud on Railroad, and he is writing, well, it used to be called Final Boss Best Friends, but now has a new title that's actually more accurate. So it's called Ender's Apocalypse now. It's a horror system lit RPG, and the horror is capitalized because it, yeah. We have a joke. I and Sasha have a joke, I should say, or Raja. I should call him Raja. Yeah. So I and Raja have a joke where he always tries to write something fun and lighthearted and always point out the things that are like horribly gruesome and like completely like depressing. And he's like, oh, I didn't even see that. I'm like, how can you not see that? Yeah, my favorite story about that was like the one where he was like, I'm going to write a fun, lighthearted story. I'm like, let me just point this out here, dude. Your fun, lighthearted story starts by your serial adulterer getting betrayed by his best friend and sent to a human trial that literally drops him into an alternative dimension that is basically hell, and he lands in a pile of corpses where there is no hope is written on the wall in blood.
How funny. And then the second
and then he opens the door and there's like literal demons who want to eat him, and his like zone of influence is slowly shrinking. There's no food. He's like, yeah. I'm like, how is that fun lighthearted? Like, how?
That reminds me of, have you ever, I don't know why I'm starting this with have you ever. Okay. There, you can look up, you know, the song, this little piggy with your toes, mm-hmm. like this little piggy went to market, this little piggy. Yeah. Almost every language country has a version, and they're generally a little cute, but a little dark, because obviously, like, this little piggy getting eaten. The Russian one, I cannot remember exactly, but it's just like this wolf died, like, and his skin is rotting in your backyard. Like, this one ate your mom. I mean, it's so funny. Like, it's so dark, and it's like it says a lot about each country when you read what their this little piggy is.
There's I don't think we have that in Germany. We just
really
eat it. No, we just eat it. It's efficient. Why would you write a song about it? Is the song a moral that we can teach our children? Like, for example, if you don't eat your food, you will starve and die.
Which is a
children's story I was told, by the way.
When I was in Sweden, I was trying to learn Swedish, and I was in a class with some other people who, obviously expats, who would come to Sweden, and they were telling us about the different vowels, and some of them have umlauts over them, and this German girl says, "Well, but when do you use an umlaut?" And they're like, "No, it's just in this word." And then, and she's like, no, but what are the rules? And she's just like, leave it to the German to ask, what are the rules? Like, well, she's like, no, but what?
There are rules.
Yeah, no, yes. The Swedish rules about their languages. It's pretty much like they just grabbed like 12 different languages and said, we'll take this word and we'll take this word.
Same with the French. Yeah. You know what? Put a little, you know the word hospital? Just put a little circle about the O. Okay, does it change anything? Is there a rule about it? No. It would just confuse the hell out of the Americans and the Germans.
Yeah. Well, they have different grammar rules depending on the origin of the word.
Oh, yeah.
And
English does too, by the way.
I know, but it's a lot easier when it's your own language. I every time I complained, my Swedish coworkers would be like, there. And I'm like, okay, fine.
Yeah, also like, run.
Yeah.
run, right? But I think, like, did you ever eat sushi while you were in Sweden?
Yeah.
Was it sweet?
I don't remember.
It must have been sweet. Because, I mean, like, how else? Are you, like, it's always sweet over there because of the Swedish fish. Mm-hmm.
Have you ever? what do they call it? Right? That rotten fish that they.
The one, Sustrumen, yeah. I'm saying that with like a lot of confidence, but I'm probably wrong. So.
It's like a biohazard to bring it on planes, apparently.
I think it's also banned in the U.S.
Yeah, we. I somebody brought it to a party as a joke, and like you have to open it underwater because the smell is so bad that you can't open it in air, and the guy who was dared to open it still vomited anyway, and then that was just the end of that prank, and they didn't try it on the Americans again.
I have a friend And this is like, again, the longest podcast. And we're still in the shout outs, by the way. But she is a bit of a like world traveler and like a language connoisseur. She speaks like 17 languages, including the dialect, or like I should say regionalect, sorry, of the Faroe Islands. And she tasted that fish. And she was like, I tasted a lot of food. I ate a lot of food. And I will generally tolerate everything. I cannot eat that fish. So yeah. There you go. All right, but this has been a Crit RPG podcast. We are way over time, and we're probably going to, my editor is probably going to murder me. Meg, do you have any last words for the main show?
No, I just want to say thanks. It was fun to be on.
Then do it.
Thanks. It was fun to be on.
Thank you. Yeah, cool. Awesome. See, that was easy. All right. Thank you, everyone, for listening and watching. If you enjoyed this show, and I really hope you did, because it was basically just us cracking jokes and one of us laughing, which was me, because Megan's jokes are actually funny. Then, yeah, please do like, subscribe. You can also check out all the other interviews I did. And, yeah, do check out Megan's book. It's called what, Megan?
So When Am I a Hero?
Exactly. Once you hit 1,000 followers, that's the answer. No, I'm quite sure you'll get there. If it hasn't been clear throughout the podcast, Meg's book is amazing. You should go and read it. It's one of the only Sys Apocalypse I actually like, because I am not a person who likes Sys Apocalypses because of the like depressing stuff. But Megan really does kick it off, because it's, yeah, like you said, yeah, it's depressing, but also there's hope the entire time. So, yeah. If you like reading about kids in shopping carts going over the edge and falling to their imminent death, then you should check it out. This has been a Critology podcast. Thank you so much for listening and watching. And I'll see you next time. And if you're on Patreon, the show goes on.